I'm Lindsay.
I'm Austin.
And I'm Joe from PopX Cast,
a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in
3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to the Starling Tribune. I am Stargate Pioneer, the chief editor of this newspaper. My friends call me SP, and your other reporters for this special winter hiatus episode of the Starling Tribune, covering episode 1 of season 2 of the DC's Legends of Tomorrow, Arc Chris.
I knew we were all in trouble when Rip made us put on blouses just to save the King of France.
And head of the financial desk is Mr. Neil.
All I remember is being knocked out by that skinny little Englishman.
And heading up our media and entertainment section is Michelle.
I love roasting Nazis.
Who doesn't? This podcast is recorded live on Thursday, January 5th, 2017 on the Gunna Geek Network. And you can find us on the webpage geeks.live. So just to give everybody a little qualifier of how we are qualified to podcast about the CW TV shows, we're basically comic enthusiasts, right, Chris?
What's a comic?
I think all the signs behind your head say differently. And Neil.
That's just art.
Oh, I hit my local comic store on the way home today and I picked up way too many comics.
Was it over $50?
Well, Canadian, so does that count?
Yes.
Yes, then it did.
Okay, I was over $50 this week, too. I was at 63. And Michelle.
Oh, I admit I'm behind, but hey, my cancer hoodie came in, so yay.
Yay, Stephen Amell doing some good stuff. So since Arrow, talking about Stephen Amell, is still on holiday hiatus, tonight we'll be discussing the first episode of the second season of Legends of Tomorrow. And as always, we'll be covering highlights of news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could include details, specifications, and other notes about future episodes of Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, and if CW gets their act together, Constantine.
Who?
Oh, you just, why can't you? I mean, can't we just leave that alone?
I was actually presenting it in a positive light. Chris took it down.
Who?
What?
You're killing me, sir. You're killing me.
What are you guys talking about? I'm so confused. But while I'm confused, I'd like to remind everyone, the discussion and speculation we have tonight's probably going to include a lot of information the showrunners and actors have shared in various interviews, con appearances, things like that. We will be throwing out some wild speculations based off of what they've said. So we could be spoiling things because we might actually be right when we guess what's going on. So consider yourselves warned.
And speaking of spoilers, we sometimes geek out and talk about this week's DC Comics. So every once in a while, there could be a comic book spoiler, but we promise we'll try our best not to ruin anything for you.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, why don't you swing by our podcast network home at GunnaGeek.com, where you can find all of our past shows, plus a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles, all under the Gunna Geek Productions banner.
Gunna Geek rules! Thanks, guys, for running all that stuff down. But now it's time to get into the real content, the meat of the show. So, Neil, go ahead and break down the current episode for us.
Thanks, SP. So, as you said, tonight, we're talking about Season 2, Episode 1 of DC's Legends of Tomorrow, titled Out of Time. The original air date was Thursday, October 13th, 2016, and it was directed by a pretty common name if you've listened to us talk about this show before, Dermot Downes. He's directed 5 episodes of Legends, 3 of Arrow, 6 of Flash, 3 of Supergirl, some iZombie, some originals, some Gotham. He has serious comic book cred. Now, the writers for a premiere, you can guess, they pulled out all the big guns. The teleplay was done by Mark Guggenheim, the executive producer of Arrow and Legends himself, and Phil Klemmer, who's also been doing the teleplays and show running for Legends. Also on the story, we have Greg Berlanti, yes, the mastermind of the Berlantiverse himself, the mega producer of Arrow, Flash, Legends, Supergirl, and Riverdale. And story was also by Chris Fedak, who's got credits on Legends Forever and 17 episodes of Chuck. Gotta represent.
It was well done. They spent the summer planning for it, and I think they hit on all cylinders. The ratings? Yeah, well, for a CW show, especially for this CW show, they came back with a bang. They had a total of 3.01 million viewers for this first episode of their second season. I think that's a win for this series because last season they didn't finish off really well. It was under a 2, actually closer to 1 for their final episode. And if you want to compare it to the other three CW comic book shows in their first episode, Supergirl got a 3.06, The Flash got 3.17, and Arrow, our main show, oh, poor Arrow, 1.86 for its debut episode this year. So I would say Legends of Tomorrow did pretty well.
Ouch.
Pretty solid for Legends.
But for Arrow, though, that was the ouch. I mean, great for Legends, but Arrow, ouch.
I think we've all agreed, since the main show we podcast on is Arrow, I think we all agree that the show made some serious missteps in season 4. Matter of fact, not to belabor the point too much, but I was driving with my daughter to an appointment earlier this week, and she's like, yeah, I don't watch Arrow anymore. I said, well, why is that? Because it killed Laurel. It wasn't great. So she said that on her own, by the way. I didn't prompt her. So she doesn't like watching Arrow anymore because Laurel is not on Arrow. And Chris, I know you're right in that same boat.
That's about the only thing they've done right on that show is kill her last season.
It lost some tween viewers from it, that's for sure.
Well, I'm obviously not part of the tween demographic, so.
Oh, really? I didn't know what gave that away. Was it the beard or the head?
The chrome dome.
I don't know. That's what, you know, the tweens, that's what they're doing these days. They're shaving their heads.
Yeah, they're growing big-ass beards and shaving their heads.
Trying to. It's hard to do that when you're 13.
It's like a football game on their upper lips at that point in time.
Wow.
You've not heard that expression before? It's 11 on each side.
Yeah. So let's just move back into the Legends of Tomorrow episode because it was a good episode. I love this episode. I've been waiting to podcast on this show forever. And then Michelle wanted to do some mid-season wrap-ups of Supergirl and for The Flash. And I said, okay, but I've been revving to go on this episode. So let's dive into it. What was the overall theme for the episode, Michelle?
Well, it's called Out of Time. So technically they're outside of regular time by living in the time stream. And they also only have so much amount of time to settle the events because of the time quake, you know, New York City being bombed and the Nazis winning and stuff. So they only have so much time to change that before everything settles and becomes permanent.
Yeah, that works for me.
I'm good with that.
I was talking to Steven, the network owner of Gonna Geek, earlier this week, and I told him, I think this was the funnest comic book show that I have watched in a couple of years. It was fun. Of course, you had the Nazis to go after. You had Sarah mixing it up with Queen of France, and you had Einstein in there. It was fun, front to back. There wasn't a dull moment in this entire episode.
Yeah, when you start off with the guys in blouses trying to save the King of France, you know you're onto something good.
I totally agree with you, SP and Michelle. It was nonstop fun and action. And I think Legends knew what they had to do. They figured out what show they were. They weren't the serious one. They weren't the tender fatherhood one. They weren't the girl power one. They're the fun one, right? They're the popcorn show on the network now, and they've embraced it, and they're kicking butt.
And I would argue and say it's their best show they have this current season of CW superhero TV shows.
Ooh, them's fighting words.
I stand by those words, too. It is the most fun and the best.
Definitely fighting words, because The Flash for the last 2 years has been high on everybody's list. I will argue, though, that this season of Arrow has resurrected that show for me. going into last season, I was all hyped over it. And I think this season has started to go that way. We talked about its problems, but it's hard to argue with you, Chris. It really is. I mean, I could make an argument. We could spend a whole podcast talking about it, but I'm just going to give it to you because this is a fun show this year.
That's my thoughts, at least. I know there's some people who disagree. I see in the chat room, Suncast wouldn't go that far, but I do. I'm a rebel. I rebel.
Are you giving us hope?
No, because they cut my line out of the movie.
Ooh.
Oh, they did, didn't they?
They also cut the TIE fighter scene on the platform out of the movie, and I've heard that that was just test footage, and it was only in the trailer. And I was like, really? I was looking forward to seeing that scene, and it wasn't until after I saw the movie, I saw the trailer again, and I was like, that wasn't in the movie! And then I got the story behind it. It was test footage only. Star Wars.
But no, it's so much better than last season.
Yeah. And but it started off with a lot of time travel-y goodness and a fair share of fights and stunts. Guys, thoughts on your favorite fights? Mine, I think, was where it started, the French Chateau fight. You had ninjas, you had musketeers, plus you had the legends screwing things up in general.
That's tough to fight against, actually, because you said the ultimate word there in ninjas. It just needs some pirates and we'd be all good to go.
And they know that ninjas trump everything because they brought them back later in the season.
They do. And Sarah's basically a ninja, too.
How can you go wrong?
Yeah. For me, it was just seeing Sarah go against Dark. And I love the fact that he knew she was League right from the bat. Like, it's great because, like, if you've never seen Legends before, maybe you've never seen any of these shows before, it's this great moment of, like, she's fighting and he's like, oh, that's League of Assassins. And it gives, like, a lot of backstory to both characters that she's trained, he's trained, he recognizes it. And just to see Sarah, my poor Sarah, get beat, which is rare, but I still like the fight, though.
Totally. No, that was a great fight. I think what was neat is you had great little one-on-one fight montages like Sarah versus Damian Dark, and you had Ray doing his thing, and you had Heatwave doing his thing, but they really made a lot of effort, or they put a lot of effort into showing you that they were not coordinated. And to spoil it going forward, and of course, we're going to talk about more of this season, when we see the Justice Society fight in a very coordinated method shortly, it's a big difference to how the Legends approach battles like this.
It is, and I was going to bring up the Justice League as well, because we see them at the end of the episode, and just the way they come in, just all sure of themselves, in formation, basically, with, what's her name, Star Girl coming in and landing on the platform and then putting her scepter, I guess.
It's a staff.
The staff down and just clunk it, and you're like, uh-oh. And you see Mick's face, right? And it's like, this ain't good. And he's all bravado and stuff, but he's like, you know, I could just tell in his face. He thinks this is going to be an issue. He's all for the fight, but he's like, you know, I don't know if we can win this one, guys.
It's just fun to see Stargirl on screen again after she had a few episodes of Smallville, that she did. Small Girl. Where the hell did that come from? I'm blurring all my shows together.
It's the first cast of the year, Chris. You're okay.
Just how much have you had to drink before we podcasted tonight, Chris?
If I told you, then I'd be... No, I haven't had anything. Sadly.
Rip notices that they're not very coordinated either. And he's kind of frustrated. All episode.
He is. He's learned to live with it, though, and he's very frustrated because they're basically taking the place of the Time Masters, Time Lords. What are they in the show? I keep forgetting.
Time Masters.
So they're taking the place of the Time Masters, trying to correct all of history, and he knows that they're just doing it with baling wire and Coke cans, and along comes this really big threat, and he's like, we are not ready for this. And he's tried to get Jax to be the chief engineer of the ship. He's tried to instill a little bit more team in the whole place. I don't think he's really picked a number two. That comes out later in the season, but he's tried to get this. I mean, heck, even Mick knows how to fly the ship. That surprised the heck out of me.
And I noticed that it's not like a lover anymore. There's a hover ball thing, track ball thing now instead of the lover from last season. SP's favorite. I know that was his favorite piece of technology from season one was the little level, but now there's like a little track ball thing. And I guess pushing some buttons and waving his hands. It's like, yeah, okay.
I was going to bring that up. The controls have been morphed into the second season into something a little bit better. And, you know, if that stick ever goes on sale on auction, I will bid for it. Probably I won't be able to afford what the final thing is, but I will bid for that control stick because it is my favorite control of the Wave Rider. So let's transition a little bit into the actual eras themselves. So they start in 1637, I believe, and they're trying to save the future of France. And I think that this team was perfectly suited for what happened, but at the same time, they just royally screwed up everything that they were doing.
They saved the king of France. That's not a total screw up.
In Sarah's defense, I think she actually helped the situation. Because, you know, as Jax noted, you know, she was all warmed up. So considering that the goal was to conceive a baby, Sarah had a little fun and I think helped history.
It was very nice of her to help out. Thank you, Sarah Lance, for helping out.
More power to her. I think she did everything that she had to do. But they had to use their powers and the people saw the ship fly away. And, you know, that's got to make an impact. If they keep on doing this, these UFO sightings or whatever keep coming up. And I think that's what allows them to be discovered in the end anyway. I mean, the one picture of the Atom in his, I don't remember what era it was, but he's in his like armored suit and he's being knighted or whatever.
It was a medieval illuminated transcript or like a manuscript. It was biblical text with all the pictures and the fancy scrolly words, and he was a knight.
So basically, it was a comic book of the era.
Let's go with that.
Okay.
I like it.
And then they transfer over to 1942, even though they were told never go to 1942.
But it's a time quake. They have to go.
They got
to
do their job, man.
Yeah. Come on. When do the legends follow the rules?
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
They don't. That's why we love season two.
I loved all of 1942, too. I probably not really era specific or anything, but I mean, Adam flying along with the big hood ornament and Mick being a G-man, that really went down well.
Oh, God, the outfits were wonderful. Hey, look, I like costumes and I love it when they're period specific and everything. What they had Sarah in was amazing. And I loved the little gun on the little thigh thing that she had. I noticed that furry shawl thing. It's still, I can't help it. Okay, look, if you're new to the show and you didn't listen to anything that we talked about with Legends during the summer, newsflash, I have a crush on Sarah. So there we go. You've been warned.
We'll give that to you. I mean, I think most of us have a crush on Sarah. I mean, I think most of everybody has a crush on Sarah. I think we're all good there. But my mind keeps on going back to another time travel show that came out this year on NBC called Timeless. And they went back to the Nazi era a couple of times, seeing the Legends of Tomorrow. And this came out first, by the way. This Legends of Tomorrow World War II episode came out first before Timeless did anything. I think that they both had different tones, but both were set in different countries. Like this was set in America versus the Timeless episode was set in Nazi Germany. So I could see the different tones there. But if you're interested in Timeless, go check it out. You might like it if you like this episode. I had a little problem though. So they're wheeling out the nuclear bomb.
Atomic bomb.
Thank you very much. They're wheeling out the atomic bomb. It's in Nazi colors. It's in New York, but it's in Nazi color with a swastika on it in New York. And that's not very covert at all. I swear, if they're going to do it, it's going to not be like that, guys. Sorry.
You've seen all the period pieces. The Nazis weren't covert. Hell, Hydra wasn't covert in to cross the streams here. They put the big Hydra symbol every time you walk in any Hydra facility, even their covert labs in downtown New York. So I can give it to the Nazis on this one.
So it's interesting that the show, you know, they said, we got to save Einstein so the bomb doesn't go off and everything. And they fall into the trappings that there can only be one person. But we find out that Einstein's ex-wife is also capable. I don't know much about the Manhattan Project and everything. Is it just Einstein?
It was Oppenheimer, really, and it was out west, mostly, and the first explosion was at the Trinity site, which is in New Mexico, and you can tour it. They open it up about once a year, maybe twice a year. You can actually go out there, and you can see where they turn the sand green glass, and the first explosion, if you've ever do any research into it, it was actually up on a tower. They put the bomb up on a tower and they just exploded it from there. And it was this big mushroom cloud and it leveled everything on the ground too. So it was out west. There were components of it that were on the East Coast, but Einstein wasn't the head of it at all. Like they were saying here, there were many people involved. Oppenheimer was basically the lead scientist of it.
So basically plot.
Yeah, because plot.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that. I was really curious. I'm sitting there going, weren't there others? But no, thank you for that, SP.
So leaving the Einstein character for a while, though, and let's get back to what we were talking about, Sarah Lance. It's the season premiere. I think what they were trying to do in this episode was to set the tone for the rest of the season. We're going to see her take the reins of leadership later on. And I think they really came out both with the time scatter and with France to demonstrate how she can kick butt and that she's not going to cut any corners or pull any punches with her sexuality either. That she was kicking butt everywhere and not making any excuses. That one line that she had was shut your mouth, Jax, or I'll cut your eyes out and feed him to you. I'm like, wow, okay, that's, yeah, okay, not pulling any punches. And I think the other thing that really stood out with Sarah for me is they focus on how she is fixated and she's got that concentration on getting revenge on Damien Dark. And that's been driving her kind of in the background as they've been the new Time Masters in what we haven't seen during the off season. And that's also screwing up the team.
I can't blame her. No matter what you think of Laurel, Chris, you can't blame Sarah for wanting to take revenge on the person that killed her sister, as well as wanting to change it eventually.
I certainly don't. I just don't like the character.
So her drive here is completely understandable, and it's the main motivating thing of the first half of the season, at least for me, and it comes out several different times. Now, because of what happens with the time scatter at the end, and all these characters are put everywhere in history, and Rip Hunter is now gone. And we haven't talked about that, but at the end, Rip Hunter is nowhere to be found. That leaves the team in a precarious position, and we're halfway through the season at the mid-season finale right now, and we still don't fully comprehend what happened with Rip Hunter. So that is another driving factor that happens this season. We'll talk about it in future episodes, but I had some issues, and I've talked to these guys about it before, but I've had some issues about Rip Hunter's disappearance in the time scatter, and it had me head scratching quite a bit in the first half of the season.
Going back to Sarah's overall arc, you touched on a lot of it is about wanting to undo the wrong that Damien has done to get revenge. But she realizes she can't. That's the big thing. And that's the thing that continues to make this character good is that if I undo this, undo her death, it undoes everything else. The butterfly effect is catastrophic. There's a thought of what the consequences are versus be like, hell with this. I'm just doing what I want, because she's learned the complications of screwing with the time stream, which I think is, it's a very interesting plot point to deal with because, like you said, she loves her sister. She wants her sister back. But if she changes it, she could destroy everything.
But she doesn't realize that right off the bat. I think she has to come and make peace with that realization. I think that was what was really juicy about this character.
I think she knows it, but doesn't want to accept it until later on in the season, because it kind of gets hinted at and she has little comments that sort of seem to indicate that, but she ignores it because she doesn't want to. And it's like you said, she has to come to that realization, accept it herself.
Yeah, because she has to realize that her obsession helps lead them to the bad guy, because she's following Dark, and then when she's there, because Ray follows her, And he's the one that actually gets her to slow down and stop because he's there. He supplied the uranium to the Nazis. And then she's like, okay, now it's bigger. And even though she stumbled when she fought Dark too long because Rip was like, fall back, fall back, fall back. Later on, she is started to realize that this is becoming a lot bigger and a lot more complicated than just a simple revenge mission.
Yeah, it's not like Kirk and Khan. This is a lot more complicated than that. And we don't just have the one villain. We have two villains.
Reverse Flash.
Yeah. Got him coming back. And Neil, what did you think about Mr. Reverse Flash coming back in this episode?
It kind of takes you by surprise. And the fact that he outright murders a member of the Justice Society, you're like, wow. All right, that had to set this up, but I did not see that coming. It was cold, but he's done it before. I mean, it's not out of character for that character. Yobard Thawne is a badass.
Remember, he went back in time to kill Barry's mom to make sure everything proceeded as it's supposed to, and thought about killing a 9-year-old Barry Allen at the same time. Yobard Thawne is a bad dude, and we're getting to remember more and more of that. And I do have to say, I think I mentioned the crossover episode, I have loved getting to see, I think Matt Lester is the actor's name, get to come in and kind of own that role after Tom Cavanaugh had it in season one. He's getting to come in now and be Reverse Flash, and he is super creepy.
Yeah, that's how he took Cisco out too, wasn't it? With the vibrating hand blade. Ugh.
I don't know. I know this is the popcorn show, and turning on the brain to think about things just kind of puts a bump into it, but perhaps could help me. Which Yobard Thawne is this? Because is it the one who is from the future, or is it the one like who came back with Barry from Flashpoint and then he leaves from there to be captain of the Legion of Doom? That's who this all becomes. Or is it, did I just do the wrong thing here?
We don't actually know. That's the thing right now. And if we skip ahead, spoiler, skip ahead to the mid-season finale where Thawne confronts Professor Stein. He has that line of, well, we know each other or something like that. And he goes, well, maybe not yet. It seems to indicate he might be from a different time that we haven't seen yet, but that he's had interaction with Stein that Stein hasn't had with him yet because of where Stein was pulled out of the timeline. So if your heads can handle the temporal headache that's about to come, I think he's from a different time frame than anything we've seen yet.
I actually think he is from the far future because he also talks to Damien and says, your whole master plan with your arc failed. You get stopped. So he knows that that happens in the future.
Okay. So this is my little theory, is that Barry has nabbed him from the initial try to kill his mom and takes him out of that into Flashpoint. So it is the original Yobard Thawne that has come back. But what he's done is he's seen what's happened over in Star City, or Barry's told him. And so he knows that the plan fails because Barry is just trying to tell him about how bad he is. Because he's got to visit him every once in a while to give him a big belly burger. And they have to have something to talk about. So
the universal constant.
Exactly. So they talk about stuff like that. And that is my two cents. I could be completely wrong, but that is what I'm thinking.
Okay.
I think they're probably going to tell us later. I think they kind of have to. Because right now, I think all these speculations fit. It's going to be interesting to see what actually comes out.
Yeah, it's probably the biggest mystery of the whole frickin' first half of the seasons for all four of these shows, actually, is who exactly is Yobard Thawne and what is he up to, really? So, as we've seen, all these shows are actually intermingled, a little bit less so with Supergirl, but they do interact. I think Flashpoint is the overriding thing that has touched every one of them, except for maybe Supergirl. But I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Okay. Mick, he's great, and Ray's great. Those two have kind of become an item, so to speak.
SP, are you shipping, what would that be, Malmer?
No, I wasn't intentionally. I was like, they're partners. I wasn't trying to ship them, but okay, if you want to go there, you were the one that met Mick Rory, so you can go ahead and ship that man as much as you want.
Or it could be Atwave, I guess. I'm not sure.
Atwave.
Adam Wave.
A Wave. All right.
Anyway.
Listener, if you want to ship those two, what shipping name would you give the Adam and Heat Wave?
I think Mick Rory has, again, some of the best one-liners. I think both Michelle and I picked out one-liners from Mick Rory at the beginning of the show to kick this off with. And it's easy to think that he's just bumbling through this, you know, just the brawn. But a lot of this wouldn't have happened. He is the linchpin. He was the one that was still in the ship in stasis. He gets to pilot the Wave Rider in this one. He actually followed orders in France by not bringing the gun. You know, and Einstein, well, Einstein thought he was the brains of the operation, but he's kind of the linchpin and continues to be that role as we go forward.
Absolutely. And I don't know if that was a contractual thing. Like, he's like, well, if you want me to stay part of the show, I need to morph my character a little bit from where it was, or if it is where Guggenheim and company wanted to go. We talked about it before. They did spend an entire summer planning this particular show because they knew they dropped the ball on it in the first season. They were still renewed. So they're like, okay, let's do something better with it this year. I think that's part of it. I think that was good. What else do we have to talk about? Michelle, anything else in your notes?
I really thought it was funny how they time scattered. Ray ended up with dinosaurs 70 million years ago, you know, had the beard and everything. Stein and Jax became wizards in a court of England in 821. I love the little cell phone, my magic mirror. Ooh.
Off with our heads.
And then, of course, Sarah, 1693 Salem, accused of being a witch. And they're like, corrupting our women. And she's like, well, happily. So I thought those were really nice touches.
It's just lucky for Jax and Stein, they got sent at the same time or they'd be dead.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I think that's what, because Rip did this little device. So he must have programmed it to make sure that they're always together forever because they're Firestorm.
One would hope.
Yeah, they would die if they didn't merge within a certain time period, right?
Yes.
We were mocking his captaining skills in season one, but he got that right. And his, you know, wax on, wax off moment with Jax was good. He's been inadvertently teaching him about the ship, and Sarah looks like she's been doing a lot more piloting. So the team is coming together. You kind of get the feeling that he was going to ditch them anyways if the time scatter didn't happen.
Maybe. So we didn't talk a lot about Nate, but he's the one that finds the team. He becomes basically part of the team as this season goes on, but it plays a part even in this episode. And I'm liking him. At first, when he met Oliver, I was like, this guy's a doofus. I guess he's just the guy coming in to save the team or whatever. I had no idea that he was going to be so integral for the rest of the season. And now that I've watched the first half of the season, he's one of my favorite characters. I really enjoy him.
I don't like him at this point in time in the show. It took a while for him to grow on me.
That's fair.
And he's supposed to be, and you could say this about Ray sometimes too, but I think he's supposed to be the viewer. He's supposed to be just the not the superhero that is observing all this in awe and wonderment. And I think he does a pretty good job of portraying that in these early episodes before he, spoiler alert, becomes Citizen Steel.
I loved how Ollie just looked at him and just was like, oh, come on. You wanted to be a time traveler. You wanted to do this. Like, why else wouldn't you come here? So.
Yep. Chris, you got anything left on the episode that we haven't discussed yet?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head, no.
Okay. It's kind of hard to think off the top of your head without any hair up there, right?
My head's cold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All the time.
Neil, you got anything up from the cold auspices of Canada there, your igloo?
All I have to say is the one-liner from Gideon, as she said when they were going towards the atomic bomb, that Gideon says, I'm here, Captain, just before the time scatter. She seemed so human at that point, and that was a bit of a gut-wrencher.
Yeah, that was great. And the fact that the ship was basically, I guess it's a plot thing, but the ship was damaged, and that's why they had to get out of there. And you know, 58, 60, 70 years later, it's fine. I guess that's a testament to Gideon and how Gideon fixed the ship or something, I guess. We haven't talked about it, but Something happened with that ship over those 70 years. Yeah. Plot. Well, I really enjoyed this. We are going to talk more about Legends of Tomorrow because, well, let's face it, we don't have any Arrow to talk about for a couple of weeks. So what do we got for next week, Neil?
Next week, we're on to season one, episode two, titled The Justice Society of America. Air date was Thursday, October 20th. And the summary is that the Legends discover a time aberration that threatens the Justice Society of America, who are on a mission to intercept and seize a mysterious package in Nazi-occupied Paris. So more fun with Nazis. Director was Michael Grossman. Writers were Chris Fedak and Sarah Nicole Jones.
Awesome. So I can't wait for it. This has been a fun series, as we talked about. And especially with the Justice League of America coming in, it's going to be fun.
Society. They precede the league.
That's right. Justice Society of America. Fair enough.
It's your golden age JLA, basically.
Yeah. So as we've done for the 5 years that this podcast has been on the air, we talk about the Easter eggs and pop culture references in each episode. In this particular case, we took an article from comicbook.com that went down several of the references that were caught in this episode. So, Michelle, you want to start out with the first one?
Sure. Out of time. As has been the case a lot in the first couple of weeks of CW TV season, the episode title, Out of Time, is a bit of a reference in and of itself. It's likely been the name of a number of time travel-related stories, but most recently it was the name of a story that ran through The Flash 30-35 and featured, among other villains, the Reverse Flash. The fact that the final moments of the episode incorporate the surprise appearance of Eobard Thawne then suggests this could have been a more than incidental use of the name.
I'll take the next one. Believe it or not, and we've already talked about this, we got a reference to Oliver Queen. I didn't actually expect this. He was seen wearing a suit. He wasn't in his Green Arrow costume, and he was busy being mayor when someone came and grabbed him and basically told him that the Legends were in trouble, and that's what they were calling themselves. So it was a great cameo by Oliver Queen to kick off the Legends season two.
Again, Arrow is carrying water for everyone else.
I think it was intentional by Guggenheim and company to say an homage to Stephen Amell that, hey, you were the one that started this whole thing, so we want you to be a part of it.
Well, and also to get people interested in watching the first episode because it's, ooh, the Green Arrow's on this.
I'm not sure how much that helped them.
Eh, who knows? But next up, Nate Haywood joins the show. Nick Zano joins the cast to play the role of Nate Haywood, our resident historian expert, who becomes Citizen Steel. In the comics, he inherits the powers and the costume of his grandfather. He's a troubled individual suffering from both physical and emotional damage in the comics, but that's not the direction they're going with the TV show, so he's a little bit different than his comic book incarnation.
Looking forward to seeing how that progresses. Michelle, what do we got next?
The Three Musketeers. Cardinal Richelieu, depicted as one of the villains of Alexandre Dumas' The Three Musketeers, being included in this episode more or less cements the idea that they look like that on purpose and explains why certain characters were strategically important in the fight, like Jax, for instance, had to stay out of sight.
The next Easter egg that we had was Rex Tyler. Rex, the Golden Age Hourman, a veteran member of the Justice Society of America, is one of the DC heroes that would pass on a name and his legacy numerous times over the decade. So we got to see him in this episode. He's made a single brief appearance at the end of season one when he lands a time ship and comes out to the Legends. And we got to see him again in this episode.
Next up, like we mentioned earlier, is the return of Damian Dark. Neil McDonough's back as the big bad from season four of Arrow, despite the fact he got killed off at the end. But it's okay, it's time travel, so he can come back and play a role and become one of the time-traveling members of the Legion of Doom.
We're not going to call him that, are we?
That's what they called him in one of the trailers, I thought. I like Legion of Doom.
Oh, Albert Einstein. He's appeared in DC Comics before in an oversized issue, Superman vs. Wonder Woman. Nazis went after Einstein in 1942. Ultimately, Wonder Woman rescues him, but ends up finding out about the Manhattan Project. After becoming a person of interest for a while and throwing down with Superman a bit, she ends up teaming up with the last son of Krypton to track down and defeat Baron Blitzkrieg. Secondly, the thing with his wife is actually based in historical controversy.
Mileva Marić was a Serbian physicist and has long been rumored to have co-authored Einstein's 1905 paper on relativity.
What an amazing couple if that was true.
The next Easter egg is kind of a recurring joke. Right now, it's a thing to insult Ray. And again, calling him a Boy Scout throughout this episode, it's both a nod to this character and to last season, probably also a nod to his time as Superman. And the whole what are you without the suit line is kind of a lot like the discussions of Iron Man in the Avengers. So, you know, a couple of references baked into one.
A billionaire philanthropist playboy?
Yeah, that's right. So before we get to the last one, I got to tell you guys something. I saw the Comic-Con 2016 panel of Legends of Tomorrow. It's free on iTunes. So if you go to iTunes, you look at Legends of Tomorrow Season 2. It's one of the freebies that you can get up there. So I watched it. And one of the things that popped out on me is they were all asked if you could play another superhero other than your character, who would you play? And it got to Brandon Routh and everybody's like, okay, what's he going to be? And he said Captain America. He did not say super. He said Captain America. So the dude, he's played Superman, he's played Adam, and now he wants to play Captain America. I don't know. Maybe it'll happen. Maybe not.
He likes to wear red and blue armor of some kind, or spandex, or uniform. Look at all his superhero personas. Red and blue.
So he's got a thing, but if you want to check out a great panel, this was before the season came out, so it was at Comic-Con last summer in San Diego. So go check that out. It's on iTunes for free. So let's take out the last Easter egg of the episode.
Last Easter egg we've got, and we also touched on this, is Eobard Thawne returns as the Reverse Flash. And if you remember, this is taking place about the same time as Flashpoint, if you're watching this in the airing order of all the CW dramas. So it led to a lot of questions of what time frame is this Eobard from? And we still don't know, but he's back, he's creepy, and it's fun, and he's become one heck of a villain.
Great to see on screen. All right, so we have some news. We start out with Arrow because we're an Arrow podcast, basically. We'll talk about some generic DC comic book TV news in a second. But Chris, why don't you start us off with your favorite character?
I knew when I saw this news was unassigned, it was being left there for me. So I just decided I would take the news before you guys made me do the news. But there was a new trailer that came out for Arrow last week, I want to say. That was about 45 seconds long, kind of gave a preview of what's coming up ahead, and pretty much all but confirmed that the Laurel we met at the mid-season finale is in fact Black Siren, the meta version of Laurel that we met in Flash earlier this year. The Laurel we all know and love is dead, and you know what? If this is how they want to bring Laurel back, it's an interesting way to do it, and I'm okay with it, because this character hasn't been ruined, because she's evil.
We'll see how that goes. All right, Neil, I know one of your favorite characters is Diggle, so why don't you take the next news story?
Yeah, so this is actually kind of a cool news story that just dropped yesterday. On an interview with TV Line, executive producer Wendy Miracle told TV Line that Diggle emerges from jail with a much bigger drive and not the same fatalism that he had earlier in the season, which is good because who likes emo Diggle? She didn't say that, but that's what I'm saying. Wendy Miracle went on to say that he's going to come up against Colonel Walker and grow closer to Adrian Chase. Well, now, if you've been following Arrow, we know that Adrian Chase is the DA, and he's most likely Vigilante. At a holiday party over the hiatus, he actually spoke with one reporter and said, I'm getting sick and tired of wearing, ski goggles. So that's a pretty good nod that he is going to be Vigilante. So Diggle is going to make a friend in the courtroom and a friend on the streets.
Can't wait for that to happen. You know, Vigilante is going to be fun in the second half of the season because it's a cool costume, ski mask and all. I like it. All right. So another favorite of the entire cast here, Talia, is set to play a crucial role. Why don't you tell us about it, Neil?
Great. So we've seen Talia show up in the flashbacks. Now, we've had Nisa Agul in the last couple of seasons, but we haven't yet seen the more famous daughter of Ra's al Ghul, and that's Talia. So I don't know about you guys. When I saw her last season, I squealed a little bit. But again, Wendy Miracle has come out in the same TV Line article and called the Prometheus mystery a gift that keeps on giving, adding that Ra's al Ghul's daughter Talia is going to play a crucial part in helping Oliver solve the Prometheus mystery. This means, unless it's still all in flashback, she is going to be seen in the current continuity. Did you ever think we were going to get both Nyssa and Talia in the same season? That would be awesome.
I never thought it would happen.
Not on the CW. However, over on the Hallmark Channel, just about every single one of these actors have been on in the holiday season. It was, by the way, the Hallmark Channel's biggest holiday season ever. They outranked everybody else on TV. And it's just good, fun movies that happen during the holiday. And a lot of these characters are in there, like Nyssa, for instance. And go ahead, any single movie. I enjoyed seeing Colin Ferguson back from Eureka. I enjoyed seeing just a bunch of the actors that we know from these shows that were in there. And it's done for the year, but if you wait for a few months, you will see them again starting in late October 2017, because they rerun all these movies over and over again. I saw some really young actors, by the way, years before they made it all the way here. So if you just want to check out any of these, Talia, Nyssa, if you want to check out, what's his name, Superman from Supergirl, the dad, Supergirl's stepdad, he played a reporter.
Dean Cain?
Yeah, because he was Clark Kent.
Yes. Dean Cain was on a Hallmark Channel movie. So just putting a plug in there for the Hallmark Channel. Yeah, I know you're all like, oh, I can't believe you're saying that. But it's how these actors make their money in the off season. So,
and Hallmark Channel, if you want to sponsor the Starling Tribune, send us an email.
Yeah, do that and make sure you provide all of us with a 2017 GMC 4x4 Sierra as well. Okay. I'm going to move on to the rest of the general DC TV news. Michelle, why don't you take the story on Kevin Smith?
Sure. Our favorite Kevin Smith. We get a clip from his episode that's coming up. So after directing an episode of season two of The Flash, he's returning with Supergirl. The big development, Mon-El finally got a job. If you listen to our Supergirl episode, it was one of us, Neil, maybe, who thought he was going to get the job at the bar. Well, guess what? You called it, sir. He's got a job at the bar. And that party bar Daxamite's putting that his love of alcohol to good use. So he just needs to learn what club soda is. So Kara would be happy.
So, Neil, what do we got with the Legion of Doom?
Well, also over the holidays, we had the new Legends of Tomorrow trailer for the second half of the season drop. And it all focuses on the Legion of Doom. The Legion of Doom? The Legion of Doom. It was a lot of fun. And of course, Sarah doesn't want to call them the Legion of Doom. And we also learned from a Sarah and Jack exchange that the Legion has dun-dun-dun Rip Hunter, who we saw at the end of the mid-season finale, that he's working in Hollywood. It had a lot of great action, and it's what we've come to expect this season from Legends, so I am super pumped.
Can't wait for it. So, Michelle, I know one of your favorite characters from over on Supergirl is Wynn, and Jeremy Jordan, who plays Wynn, talks about Wynn's evolution on Supergirl.
Yes, in an interview with comicbook.com, Jeremy just discusses how this transition from Wynn from the Catco to DEO has changed his character, has allowed him to grow and evolve. He's finding it really fun and exciting to play these new aspects of Wynn. He says Wynn is growing up and learning to guard himself and learning to protect his friends, and he kind of becomes a little bit of the sage advice giver this season. Whether he's giving advice to Alex or cautioning James to take it easy, I think he's learned a lot from Kat, and he's learned a lot from his experience in the past year or so, and it's forced him to grow up a lot.
I'll bet. You know, he took that hard left turn at Albuquerque and left Catco and joined the DEO, and it's been fun to watch him ever since. I wonder if they would have had that big of a shift in the character had they not moved from LA to Vancouver in the production. I wonder if they had planned for that change.
Who knows? I like it so far, though. Speaking of some other stuff I do, like comicbookmovie.com had a really cool story. They found out that Geoff Johns will return to writing comics in 2017, and they also teased the fact there might be another DC TV show coming to the airwaves. So if you guys aren't familiar, Geoff Johns is quite possibly one of the best writers that DC Comics has. In fact, he is now their chief creative officer, also responsible for running the movieverse of things. It is said he'll be coming back to comics, and he'll also be doing another DC TV show coming up. Now, what he's coming back to write is going to involve some of the Watchmen characters that are in the Rebirth event. But the new TV series, we don't know much other than the fact that they just kind of teased something, and we have no idea where it's going to air, what it's going to be about, but it's coming. So, any speculation?
Did you guys catch the reboot, the news story that I threw in the group chat right before we started to record?
Uh-oh.
That's Charmed.
Charmed is coming back to the CW network in a reboot.
I somehow doubt that's what Geoff Johns is involved with.
Yeah, they're not DC characters, though.
I get that, but CW is really pulling out all the stops. They're going to have this lineup Monday through Friday that is going to rival NCIS by the end of this. This is going to be interesting.
Who do we think it is, though?
Dare we dream Constantine, or are they going somewhere else?
Could be Blue Beetle.
I would love to see a Geoff Johns Constantine, but Booster Gold would also be really cool if Geoff Johns was involved in it.
Well, you know, it is the CW, and we do have an Artemis, if there's a redemption arc. We've got Roy Harper.
Green Lantern.
We could get a Teen Titans.
Ooh.
And it has lots of beautiful people, man. That's right up the CW's alley.
Mm-hmm.
Well, remember, they did try and do a Titans show on, what was it, TNT, and it didn't make it much past the pre-production stage.
But this is the CW.
This is Geoff Johns, and this is CW. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a whole new ball game here.
Especially if they get people that we already know.
But it wouldn't be cheap to make. That's one thing to consider.
Well, they're still being Vancouver, and the actors aren't too expensive.
Well, the effects on Starfire and Changeling would be expensive.
Yeah, I would think that Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow have been expensive shows to make, and they're still on the air.
Well, they probably won't do Changeling and stuff.
Hawk and Dove and Nightwing and...
Gotta remember, though, if you're going to do a Titans show, a lot of those kids that are growing up and in that perfect tween demographic watch the Teen Titans Go cartoon on the Cartoon Network right now, which is the kidified version of the Teen Titans cartoon from the mid-2000s, so... If you keep some of those same characters from a cartoon that a lot of kids watched as kids as they grow into being tweens, it's how you get people interested.
Hey, listener, if you have any idea of what this new TV show that Geoff Johns is going to be a part of with the CW network, by the way, I'm very shocked that he's returning to writing comics and basically tilling the DC movie universe right now. So... this is big for him to be involved in all this. I hope he is not spreading himself too thin, but having his hands in everything DC actually bodes pretty well. And we'll see if they try to do some sort of connecting major storylines or at least, you know, major shifts in the DC universe.
Before we move on, here's one last thought. You only use your big guns, like the chief creative officer of DC, if it's a really important property that cannot be screwed up and it would reflect poorly on the rest of DC. That, to me, says maybe Supes, Tyler Hoechlin, might be getting his own show.
Hmm?
That'd be interesting.
Ooh.
It would be very interesting.
I don't want to get to the point where it's overkill. And I don't want to take anything away from Supergirl. And I'm hoping that they would do something varied. So we have Supergirl, who's this super alien Krypton. We have the Arrow, gritty, street, Flash. Well, it was light and fun, but now it's speedsters and time travel and whatever. Maybe it'll get light and fun again. And then we have the pure popcorn group, Time Spacey. So... having Superman, this is why Constantine would fit Zatanna. A Zatanna show would kind of fit.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
That supernatural sort of deal, that's a whole, but I'm afraid if they did another Superman, it would take away from Supergirl, and that would make me sad.
I think Teen Titans gives them that 20-something angsty relationship-y. They'd probably tweak it a bit, but anyways, I digress. Speaking of relationships on the CW, though, Cisco Ramon may be getting a love interest. You like that segue, guys? The showrunners, again, from a TV Line interview, mentioned that Cisco may find the badass Gypsy a very strong adversary, as well as someone he can't stop thinking about. Now, if you're a DC Comics fan, Gypsy is a character who teamed with Vibe, Vixen, and a handful of other heroes in the infamous 1980s Justice League Detroit run, and she is expected to make her way to Central City soon. Gypsy may be one to want to really help empower through the challenges ahead while shedding some of the baggage of the last few months. And he's been a sad Cisco because we all know that Flashpoint killed off his brother. So yeah, it might be fun.
Oh, some love for Cisco's life would be nice.
Totally.
So Michelle, why don't you take us out with the last DC news story here?
Speaking of possible love, the back half of Supergirl Season 2 will explore the Kara Mon-El relationship. For those who may not remember, Mon-El and kissed Kara when he was ill, but then when he got better, he sort of like, oh no, I don't remember. And they have been kind of flirty. So, you know, and Mon-El's hiding a secret. It's going to impact their season, but they are going to explore, you know, the chemistry and see if they got something there. Be cute.
Aw.
Yeah. Aw. All right, Neil, real quick, what do we got in comics and news before we head on out here?
Well, there was no new episode of Arrow this Wednesday, but it was new comic book day. So this Wednesday, we got a twofer. We got issue 14 of Green Arrow, The Emerald Outlaw. You can see the two covers here if you're watching the video feed. It's The Emerald Outlaw Part 3. Tension in Seattle reaches a fevered pitch. Get it? Pitch? If you've read it, you probably haven't read it yet. When the media begins to question Green Arrow's involvement in a series of murders committed by an archer with unmatched skills. Plus, if the police involvement can't catch the mysterious archer, can the Green Arrow and Black Canary catch him? And a rogue police officer, Ollie, humiliated in a viral video, returns to take the law into his own hands. And if you're curious who the other archer may be, you know, the alternate cover this week by Neil Adams gives you a pretty good idea of who it is. So definitely check that out. It's written by Benjamin Percy, who's been doing a fantastic job. They have a guest artist this week who knocks it out of the park. The primary pencils were by Eleonora Carlini, with help from Carlos Rodriguez and Gus Vasquez. Color was by Hi-Fi, and the letterer, as always, was Nate Picos of Blambot. And Nate kicks some serious butt. This week, we also got the first trade paperback from Rebirth from Green Arrow. We got The Life and Death of Oliver Queen, Broken Arrow, Volume 1. Again, the writer for this entire arc has been Benjamin Percy. The illustrators for the first arc are Otto Schmidt and Juan Ferreira. It collects Green Arrow Rebirth Special Number 1 and Green Arrow Rebirth Issues Number 1 through 5. Check it out.
Those are some good episodes. Can't wait to have the chance to reread them because mine are all in bags. Chris, we are part of a network and everybody deserves to hear about this particular other show on the Gonna Geek Network.
That's right. Like SP mentioned, we are in fact part of a network, the Gonna Geek Network, which you can find over at GonnaGeekNetwork.com. We have 19, 20 different podcasts in the network. So things, no matter what your geeky tastes are, we've probably got a show that's right up your alley. And each week we try to highlight one specific show. And this week we want to talk about Episode 30 of Friend of the Family, which is by Strange and Unusual Productions, titled Too Many Minas. This evening, in the season finale of Friend of the Family, Alice loves her sister Mina, as Modius loves himself, and Mina loves everybody. Everything is okay. We promise. Really. Don't think about it too hard. Really. So it is the season finale, so go check that out. It is a very interesting podcast. One of the ones I really like to check out. I'm behind on it, I fully admit right now, because of the holidays and not going to work. I haven't been able to listen to as many podcasts, so I'm going to have to get caught up to check out the season finale. So go check that out over at GonnaGeekNetwork.com.
Yes, one of my favorite podcasts, and I can't wait to listen to it. As Chris said, I have also not been able to listen to my podcast because I don't have my commute, or didn't have my commute over the holidays. So I'm waiting to get caught up. But I just want to say thank you very much for Strange and Unusual for being a part of the network, and I can't wait for season 3.
Thanks everyone who did tune in live tonight over on Geeks.live. I know I saw Suncast in there chatting with us back and forth, and there's probably some other people I did miss. So thank you everyone who did check things out live, anyone who downloads at a later date or views the podcast at a later date on YouTube. Make sure you download the podcasts and find all that information over on GunnaGeek.com.
And please tell all of your other friends that they can join us live on Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on Geeks.live. And I just want to throw a special thanks to our video editor, Chris, who takes care of the video for us, and to all of the fans of Starling Tribune. We really appreciated you being part of us. We had our best year in 2016. We're really looking forward to 2017.
You can watch the next live show on the Gunna Geek Network over on Geeks.live. The next live show on the network is Better Podcasting, Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. We appreciate all reviews. And like us on Facebook and YouTube and badger us on Twitter.
You can find all of our contact information over on the Gunna Geek Network at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, where you can also check out our forums and all the other shows, including Strange and Unusual Productions and all the other geeky shows. If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or drop us a voicemail. That's right, you can drop us a voicemail at 1-612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283, and we'll make sure to play it on the podcast. Guys, it was fun talking Legends of Tomorrow with you, and Happy New Year, everyone. That about wraps it up for another week. Any last words before we sign off and open up for some free time with a chat with our live listeners afterwards? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag no Nazi swastika bomb in New York.
It's a big hashtag, buddy. At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag all warmed up.
Nice.
At Michelle Ely.
Hashtag Sarah's thigh gun.
There's a theme here, and I am at Neil Isn't Witty, signing off with hashtag corrupting all your women. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.